Welcome to Parents Perspective. We interrupt this program for breaking news. The voice from the radio nearly took Celia's attention away from the road. The Department of Homeland Security has just issued a warning that portions of the nation's milk supply might be contaminated. Targeted dairy pasteurization and distribution plants around the country will be undergoing specialized inspections as soon as further details of this potential bioterrorism attack become clearer. Celia had to pull the car over and just sit for a minute to collect her thoughts. What exactly are parents with young children supposed to do? She wondered. The announcer must have been reading her mind. Parents of young children are advised to refrain from giving them milk unless it is canned or powdered until further notice. The Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, and the Food and Drug Administration have all dispatched teams of experts to review the evidence and produce guidelines for the public. Good grief! Celia took a deep breath, readjusted her rearview mirror, and prepared to merge back into traffic. Guess I'd better get to the grocery store for some powdered milk before it's all gone from the shelves. Then she felt a knot building in her stomach. I bet the school has just given the kids milk for lunch. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about our children's food safety in a world with so much terrorism? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is an expert in the area of information consumers will need at a time of possible bioterrorism. Dr. David Acheson is Chief Medical Officer and Director of the Office of Food Safety, Defense, and Outreach Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition, U.S. Food and Drug Administration. He is internationally recognized both for his public health expertise in food safety and his research in infectious diseases. Dr. Acheson is the father of one son, 21 years old. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Dr. Acheson.
Well, thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be with you.
What would you say is the most important thing parents should be aware of about the safety of the food supply in this country?
There are a number of things that parents need to be aware of in terms of food safety. And I think one of the things to recognize is that food safety is responsibility of everybody from the farm through the manufacturer to the table, that includes the consumer and the parent. And each person has a role to play. And although parents rightly expect that when they purchase food from a supermarket, it's going to be safe to eat, which is certainly our job at FDA is to try to ensure that, there are a number of things that they can do at home to help ensure that it stays safe. Some food will come into the house that's got bacteria on it that can make you sick. For example, raw meat, raw poultry, raw fish can certainly have germs on it and agents that could make you very sick. So there are a number of important things that parents can do to try to prevent that. They really sort of fall into four main areas. One of the first ones is to make sure that you cook your food properly. And there are many guidelines as to what temperature foods should reach in order to be safe, depending on whether it's a meat product or a fish product. And certainly we can talk later about where some of that information may be available for folk if they want to find it. Apropos that, it's important that they have a thermometer to measure the temperature of the food so that they can make sure that the chicken is at the right temperature or the hamburger is cooked properly. The second important message is cleanliness. That applies to the way one prepares food. And again, the issue around that is that if you've got raw meat and poultry, you want to make sure that wherever you're cutting it, wherever you're handling it, you clean up afterwards and that you wash your hands. That also spills over a little bit into personal hygiene, to make sure that when you are preparing food, you've washed your hands and that you wash them regularly. Chilling food, refrigeration, that's a third big part of keeping food safe. We know that bacteria will grow if you give them a chance. They like warm, moist places to grow for the most part. So if you've got food sitting out at room temperature, it's just been cooked and sits out at room temperature for too long, those bacteria will begin to grow and they could grow to a point where they'd make you sick. Again, it's important to make sure that you get food in the refrigerator. Don't leave it sitting out for more than a couple of hours, absolute maximum. And the fourth big message is separate. And what that means is coming back to the foods that we know are likely to have bacteria on them, like raw meat, don't put them right next to your fresh produce that you're going to eat without cooking. So in summary, cooking properly, chilling, cleaning, and separating can go a long way to keeping your food safe.
What would you say is the most likely source of food contamination?
There are many sources of food contamination. As we've discussed, the bacteria can come in on a food product. And that's inevitable because many of the bacteria that make us sick live in animals. They naturally live in animals. That's their home, or they live in the environment that animals live in. So they do occasionally get on the food. So that's an important source to be aware of. Another important source is a sick person. And if you have somebody at home or at work or a colleague, or you've got a child who's in daycare and you hear that somebody else in the daycare has got diarrhea and vomiting, you should just ask a question, you know, do I need to be extra careful with my child? And when the child comes home, make sure hands are washed and et cetera, to try to make sure that the child, should they have any bacteria on their hands that they picked up while they've been out and about, that you get rid of them. And certainly in the home, if somebody is sick, we're really talking about diarrhea and vomiting for the most part, because most bacteria and viruses that cause foodborne illness cause those two symptoms. People with those conditions need to be extra careful with cleanliness.
Hand washing is so crucial. My whole family got hepatitis on a parents' weekend visit to one of our sons in college. We all went to a restaurant. Weeks later, we all got sick within days of each other. One son was visiting a friend in California. He said, "I can't get off the floor in my friend's apartment. Mom, I am so sick. I'm wrapped up in every blanket he owns, and I just can't even stand up. I don't know how I'm going to get on a plane to go back across the country." Another son, it was the Thanksgiving week, and it was the Monday he was supposed to come home, and he said, "I can't get out of bed. I am so sick. You know, I don't know what to do." And normally, a mommy who's only 2.5 hours away would get in the car and go. Except by that point, my husband was violently ill. He was the sickest for 7 months. And then I got sick 2 days later. It was crazy. And then we called our doctor and we realized this is too much of a coincidence for one to be in California, one in Philadelphia, etc. So we were tested and we did indeed have hepatitis, all of us. And then we had to figure out where had we been 5 to 7 weeks earlier. And we had to report that to the health department in Pennsylvania and go through all this stuff. And indeed, there was someone working in a restaurant who had not obviously washed hands well enough and who had had this. That could become rampant. I mean, it really, maybe there were lots of people who got sick. I don't know, besides our family. That's all the hygiene you're talking about.
That's exactly right. And you've illustrated another interesting point about foodborne illness. If you ask the average person on the street, and I'm sure many of your listeners, if you were to just say, "Well, what do you think of a foodborne illness?" They'd probably say, "Oh, diarrhea and vomiting." But you've just illustrated that you can actually get many other very major illnesses from food. Hepatitis is one of them. And it also illustrates the point that sometimes you can wait days between the time of exposure and the time you get sick.
They told us 5 to 7 weeks, and it was 5 weeks.
Right. But the classic things that people are aware of, like salmonella and E. coli, they're much quicker. Mm-hmm. They're usually 1 to 2 days, sometimes a week. So you have a much better idea of where you may have got exposed.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on the safety of our children's food.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. David Acheson about how safe our children's food is. If there were a bioterrorist attack on our food or water supply, what would you advise parents to do besides panic?
Which we know they do, of course.
Well, unfortunately, they probably would panic. And I think that your introductory story was illustrative of the sorts of concern that would instantly be raised and what should a parent do. Maybe before I say what they should do, there are certain things that we can all do that will help safeguard the country from a bioterrorist attack. And that's really raising awareness. And I think that implies to most things that we do. Obviously, if you extend this analogy to just being watchful when you're out and about riding the metro or a bus, if you see somebody who's suspicious or packages, etc., you know, we're being constantly told, pay attention to that and report it. I think the same is true for food safety and bioterrorism in food. If you see something when you're shopping at the supermarket and somebody is acting suspiciously. What I mean by that is if they were taking certain food items off a shelf and then replacing them with other food items out of a bag. There have been instances where, and this is more of a tampering issue, but nevertheless it speaks to, I think, some of the awareness that I'm getting at. There have certainly been instances where individuals have put products back on shelves that have been tampered with. So if you see somebody doing that sort of thing, then it's best not to ignore it, but to alert store managers that sort of thing is going on. In the context of what you can do at home is when you buy food that's packaged, check that the package is intact, check that the wrapping is intact, that it doesn't look like anybody may have opened it and resealed it. Often it's obvious if somebody has done that, but just be aware to keep your eyes open to make sure packages are appropriately sealed as you'd expect them to be. In the event that something should happen, what a person would do would be very much dependent on exactly what's happened. In your scenario, it was a specific food product. The federal agencies involved in food security, which are primarily us at the Food and Drug Administration, the Department of Agriculture and Homeland Security, would all be working together to rapidly figure out what's going on. And that would be to figure out what the agent is that's making people sick, which food it is in, and what the extent of the spread of it is. Is it nationwide? Is it within one city? There would be a period of time probably where we would know that there was sickness. We wouldn't necessarily know which food it was. So one of the first things that one might hear would be, we're aware that there is likely an agent in food that's making people sick, and we would come out with specific advice as to what to do, which things would be safe or what you could do to make yourself safe. And to give you an example of that, some agents that might be deliberately put in food, like the foodborne pathogens that we've talked about, are destroyed by heating. So if we thought that the agent was something that you could destroy by heating, then an instruction might be, make sure you cook everything thoroughly before you eat it. If you think that the agent is something that's not destroyed by heating, then the advice would obviously be different. As we learned more, we would be very proactive in letting consumers know exactly which food was involved, how extensive it was, what they should do. We all have to eat. And so we can't just sort of say, all right, well, let's just go on a 24-hour, 48-hour fast and get by that way. That's not going to work. So we would just have to be on top of it really fast.
I guess this brings up the question about, all right, we're talking about this food supply. What about the water supply? That's pretty heavy duty.
It is, but in actual fact, the federal agencies involved in trying to ensure the safety of food and water have done a lot of assessments on where the risks lie. And while certainly almost anything could be vulnerable, the municipal water supply in terms of widespread contamination, because it's so extensive, would be problematic in terms of putting enough of an agent in there to have an impact.
Because it would be...
just diluted.
Okay.
But it's important to be vigilant always. And, you know, I think if you experience symptoms or you see something that doesn't seem right to you, then let somebody know.
I read an article not too long ago that somebody said, well, a good defense against this is to eat things that have been grown and produced more locally so that you have more of a handle on it. Does that make sense?
That depends on what the terrorist has decided to attack. If he's decided to attack your locally grown food, it's not going to work. I wouldn't like to tell your listeners that that's the way to go. It really would depend on what food it was that we had concerns about and therefore follow advice. I think it is important that folk be aware that this sort of thing could possibly happen. And I'm not trying to generate a scare tactic here, far from it. It's just an unfortunate reality of where we are in the current day and age that some people are out there to cause us harm. And it's just one other potential route where it could happen.
Let's talk about young children for a minute. I remember when my children, who are now grown men, were little, we were advised to inspect all their Halloween candy. They could go trick-or-treating. Then we had to go through painfully slowly with each of the three bags, dumping all the candy. It had to be fair, so we couldn't mix it. We had to dump one bag at a time on the kitchen table and carefully inspect the wrappings. We unfortunately had to take away the beautiful raw apples and things like that because we didn't know if anybody had tampered with it. It was sort of difficult. Other kinds of tips for parents with young children?
You've, in a very clever way, illustrated the sort of mindset that I was getting at about just looking for evidence of tampering or somebody having fiddled with a wrapper. Obviously, if you want to consume a raw apple, you're going to go to the supermarket and purchase it and assume that it's safe, which you have every right to do, and our job is to ensure that it is safe. In terms of specifically focused on a young child, I don't think it's any different from a young child or an older child or an adult, for that matter. You really need to pay attention across all age brackets.
Do we teach children when they're, say, in nursery school or kindergarten, or when, at some point, when do we teach them, look at what you're about to be served? If someone at somebody's house, for example, gives you a candy bar, it looks like it's been rewrapped.
Yes, that's a fair comment, but I think that one of the things we've got to be careful of is that we don't blow this too far out of proportion. We talked a little earlier about food safety, and food safety is an ongoing problem that people are getting sick every day. CDC estimates we've got probably 70 to 80 million cases of foodborne illness per year in the United States. That's a real ongoing issue. So the food security piece of it is more of a plausible but unknown threat. And I think all of the things that we've talked about of trying to just be aware of tampering, or it looks like somebody's opened a package and maybe done something, is important. But if we're going to teach our children anything in the context of food and how to stay healthy and safe, I think the food safety principles are the ones that I'd want to put at the top of the list. And once they've grasped those, then let's worry about the food security issues.
So how do we deal with something like teenagers who want sushi? Getting down to real specifics.
20s and 30s are really big into sushi.
One of the key things about food safety is to know what your personal risks are. Are you a person who is at risk from a foodborne pathogen? Those of us who are healthy, middle-aged, male or female, are about optimal in terms of our resistance to food safety, to foodborne pathogens. We've had exposure through the years. We've built up our immunity. We're not so ancient that the immune system is beginning to fall apart, and we can fight the bugs. There are sections of the population where that's not the case. Young children are, certainly in the context of what we're talking about today, are particularly vulnerable. The older they get, the more they build up their immunity to foodborne infections. The elderly, similarly, at the other end of the age spectrum. Anybody who has a chronic illness, diabetics, for example, people with chronic liver disease, anybody who has had a transplant, anybody who has got HIV or AIDS or some other illness that compromises their immune system, their ability to fight disease, all are at higher risk and need to take extra special precautions with the cooking and the cleaning and the chilling and the separating that we talked about earlier to make sure that they stay safe. Now, I've skirted around your question about my 16-year-old daughter wants sushi, what should I say? Sushi prepared properly is in fact reasonably safe for somebody with a normal immune system. I personally eat sushi and I love it. So not that I'm endorsing that for the sushi industry, but that's a personal perspective.
We're going to get sponsors on this one, just wait.
So I think it's important to be aware of where what your personal risks are and whether, you know, sushi is safe for me. If a little older, maybe, you're talking about somebody who is pregnant, I would say no, avoid it because you are at increased risk.
What about symptoms in young children that parents should look for?
Yes, when I was practicing in infectious diseases and doing research, often I would get asked that question of, what are the symptoms that should make me go to the doctor? Because it may not be a very pleasant topic to talk about, but diarrhea is pretty common. It happens frequently. And the mom or the dad will be at home and they've got a kid who's a little cranky and off their food. And they often sort of think, well, is this a panic? You know, I've heard about all of these illnesses that could really be devastating. When should I go and see my physician? Well, I think one of the first messages is that if you are seriously worried, go and see a health professional. That's what they're there for. Don't sit and worry unnecessarily. Having said that, some of the things that would I think increase the likelihood that you should make that decision would be, for example, if a child has a high fever, particularly if it's gone on for more than 24 hours. Children, especially young children, can dehydrate very quickly. Even if they're not vomiting and having diarrhea a lot, if they're not drinking much and they have high fever, they can dehydrate and get very sick from that. So high fever is an important one, particularly if that's associated with shivers, which would indicate a more severe infection. Prolonged vomiting also, especially in young children, because of the worry that they'll dehydrate. They're just not consuming enough liquids. On the same vein, diarrhea that is very profuse, that's gone on for more than 24 hours, a child, again, can dehydrate very quickly. If that diarrhea goes bloody, that's another key sign that should get you. And most moms are going to look at that, and they're not going to need to be told twice. We're out of here. We're off to see the doc. So that's a fairly obvious one. And the other thing is that if the child is really complaining of a lot of abdominal pain, and it's to the point where, you know, they don't want you to go near them, they don't want you to touch their tummy at all, it's like, then that's another little sign. But those are the things that really should trigger a parent to go and see a health professional.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on how safe is our children's food.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. David Acheson of the FDA about how safe is our children's food.
What steps do you think schools and governments should use to prepare?
Our job at the Food and Drug Administration is not just to make sure that the food is safe, but to educate consumers about what to do to maintain that safety and in relation to keeping food safe. So the government does a lot in terms of working towards that. And really what they do falls, I think, into three main areas. The first is that there are laws. There are laws on the statutes, regulations that the USDA and we at FDA have to follow to ensure that food is safe. Food gets inspected, it gets tested, facilities get inspected, and any place that's found wanting in that, it will not be allowed to distribute their food product. So there are laws. The second sort of tier is guidance, and the FDA writes a lot of guidance, which is not exactly a law, but it is written to aid industry to understand what they can do to improve the safety of their food supply, of what they're working on. And then the third arm of this is risk communication, which is really the education piece, where you're actually trying to get the word out of and this not only applies to consumers and parents who may be listening to this show, but also the industry itself. We need to educate industry. Where are the risks that we've perceived based on science? And a lot of what we do, virtually all of what we do, is based on sound science. Sometimes the science is not always there, and so you have to make a judgment call based on what you have. But our laws and guidance and risk communication strategies are based on sound science. Now, you asked about schools. They are in a situation where I think there are two roles to play in a school, at least two. One is to ensure that whatever's going on in the school itself is safe, so that the schools are serving safe food. And the second piece to that is what should they be doing or what could they do to educate children about food safety. It is just one more thing on a curriculum that's already overburdened with many health messages that kids need to hear about, parents need to hear about. And we at FDA, in actual fact, have a program that we've worked on where we have educated middle school and high school teachers. And we've been doing this. It's in its sixth year. And once a year, we bring in for a week into Washington, D.C. from all over the country, and we give them an education package. They have material to work with, and they take this back, and they then train other middle school teachers in their area. So it's a way of disseminating the message. But you've got to provide the tools and the information. So there's interest out there.
Dr. Atchison, what resources do you recommend for our listeners who'd like to pursue this issue a little further?
There are many resources. Probably the key resources are web-based, the ones that are, mm-hmm. that are currently available. Many of the federal agencies that we've talked about, the Food and Drug Administration, the Department of Agriculture, have websites. And if you log on to www.fda.gov, you will find there on the main screen an area for food, and you go in there and you will find information on food safety. The Department of Agriculture also has a website, which is www.fsis.usda.gov. That's more focused on meat and poultry, which is what USDA regulates. There is a website called www.foodsafety.gov. It's an easy one to remember. It also has a lot of good information on it. And the fourth one, which I think is also good, is www.fightback.gov.
What is that all about?
We have a campaign called Fight Back. In fact, we have a little green monster called Back, which is a...
bacteria.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, sometimes we'll do conventions and somebody will be in the back suit. And one of our employees will be wandering around to this big, like this big green bacteria, looking very ugly and very mean.
Well, this has been so informative and so helpful for all of us. So on behalf of all the frantic parents out there, we want to thank you, Dr. David Atchison, for being with us today.
It's a great pleasure. I've enjoyed it very much. Thank you for asking me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 268. Tell us if you can what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Washington, D.C. with Kids is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. At the end of our program, we often thank individuals or foundations for their generous donations that help with the cost of producing Parents' Perspective programs. Parents' Perspective is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Today, it is our turn to thank you, our listeners, for your tax-deductible contributions to our annual fundraising campaign. Please send your checks or money orders to Parents' Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. That's Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. And thank you for helping us continue to work for you. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.